Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 10:49 a.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 2nd, and it's Labor Day in the USA, so the US markets are shut. And we've had quite a bit of news coming out over the weekend, not least with regard to Brexit and the risk that the UK may be heading towards another election. But I thought I would kick off and look at the Bitcoin price. It's closing today back above the psychological 10,000 level, and this is the first clear sign of an upward dynamic of any kind of substance since at least the beginning of August. There has been a sequence of lower rally highs within this range over the course of the last couple of months, but the lows have been holding, and I continue to think that the log scale chart is much more useful from an analytical perspective. It does clearly highlight the sequence of ranges one above another, but this range has been longer than the others and somewhat larger. It's also at least partially unwound the overbought condition relative to the trend mean. But I think it's also worth considering where are we in terms of this Bitcoin price. The 10,000 level is obviously a psychological level. The peak was very close to 20,000, so it's rallied back really very impressively from the lows put in at the end of last year. And some consolidation around a big psychological level like this is not too surprising. But what I find interesting is if we just consider the shape of the trend and don't worry too much about the numbers, then we had a big advance, and the percentage gains and the consistency of the trend in 2015, 16, and 17 was really quite rhythmic. Then we had a fairly substantial pullback. It certainly was a big decline relative to the peak value, but still prices are considerably above where they traded in 2015. Now let's just compare that to gold. And we don't necessarily need to compare. Whoops, that's not the right instrument. When we look at the gold price, then it also had that rhythmic advance in the period 2009 to 2011, and then it ranged for a while. Now the big determinant after a big move is whether the move back towards the peak can be sustained. It's going to be a big determinant of whether Bitcoin can in fact hold this level around the 10,000 level and improve upon it. I rather think that it can because of the supply inelasticity argument, and there is a halving coming up next year. That's going to double the difficulty of mining Bitcoin. And then of course we have the supply inelasticity argument coupled with the fact that we have negative interest rates. So I am still rather bullish of the cryptocurrency markets. But gold is where we're starting to see institutional money very freely starting to move in. Hedge funds are active in the cryptocurrency markets, and it's just beginning to open up to institutional investors with Fidelity offering custody. But gold is a lot easier even then for institutional investors to invest in. But even then, most mutual funds or asset managers don't have a mandate to invest in gold. The price remains really very steady. It was up another $9 in here today, firming from above that $1,500 area. This sequence of higher reaction lows that's been in evidence since at least June is still really quite intact. And the number of bonds that are with negative yields was at a new high on Friday, and that continues to stoke demand for gold. Then of course there are additional reasons why people might want gold. Well, one of the most important is that the only route to get out from under the vast quantity of debt that's been issued over the course of the last 40 years is through inflation. We don't really have a lot of evidence for inflation, but the PCE or the personal consumption expenditure index has continued to be rather steady, and this is a year-over-year basis. It's still around 1.5%. It's not negative, and when we think about the outlook for the US economy, then of course people are going to be worried about tariffs. One thing that I thought was interesting is there's probably no company has been more directly impacted by the trade war than Hanhai Precision. It started pulling back in 2017, but it bottomed in early 2019. Now, the price was in negative territory in here today, but it is steady, and there is a very incremental sequence of higher reaction lows. Now, they're attempting to diversify outside of China, but it would appear that a lot of the bad news has already been priced in. Then when we think about the outlook for Taiwan Semiconductor, the price had been rallying on Friday, and there's a rounding characteristic here. Having had the lower lows through 2018, we have higher lows in 2019, and that $45 area has been a bit of a psychological Rubicon over the last 18 months, but this continues to look like a range. And as long as we still have the upward bias over the course of this year in evidence, then I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. When we look at what's going on in Hong Kong, the increasingly heavy hand of law enforcement trying to quell the popular revolt is something that is not going to be easily fixed. And it is potentially going to require martial law. And China is in no mood to deal, because the last thing they want is to appear weak and to be giving in to the mob. They don't really think of Hong Kong as a self-determining enclave, but rather as just another Chinese city that should be kowtowing to Beijing. And that does represent a threat. It also represents obviously an issue for Taiwan. Personally, one of the reasons I went to visit Taiwan was to get a look at the place before, or in case, I think would probably be the better way of saying it, in case China invades. And I do think that that is a potential risk that is worth considering. What is quite clear is that the Taiwan stock market doesn't view it as a risk at all. And I think that's rather important. When we look at what's going on in terms of the Hang Seng, then the market was, I think the bigger point is that it has really gone nowhere at all in the last month, and it is at least steady in the region of the 25,000 level. What's also, I think, worth considering is that the Shenzhen 100 has been the best performing index in Europe, in Asia this year. And that's particularly following the size of the rebound that we had at the beginning of 2019. And then also it has been firming over the course of the last 3 weeks. So what that is beginning to suggest is that there is evidence in China of support for the stock market, and that remains probably one of the primary policy objectives, that despite the increasing uncertainty with regard to the trade war and with regard to what's going on in Hong Kong, the last thing they want is to a source of uncertainty in the domestic economy. So there is evidence of them supporting the stock market. I continue to think, though, that China represents a rather large risk, and that it is more of a trader's market than an investor's market. When we look at what's going on in India, then the stock market was in positive territory today. It reversed an earlier decline, and it continues to build support in this region. There was a story in the Sydney Morning Herald this morning about the rebound in higher priced properties, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne. Those were the sectors of the Australian property market that had pulled back most violently. The ASX 200 was in negative territory today, but the bigger point is that it has unwound two-thirds of its overextension relative to the trend mean, and it's at least demonstrating some evidence of support being found. The Australian dollar, though, remains in negative territory, so we're seeing that the Australian dollar's weakness is helping to support nominal prices in the Australian economy, and that is exactly the same situation in the UK, where the pound was down 94 ticks. It's right back on the lows around the 120 area. There have been fears expressed about the fact that the UK pound would decline and the UK property market would follow it, but that's not generally how things work. If the UK's currency is going to take the brunt of selling pressure, then that generally does tend to insulate nominal asset prices from declines. And when we look at the pound, it is really barely steady around the lows put in 2016 and 2017. It's been my view for months that the most logical course of action would be to at least put up the facade or try and create a credible argument that the UK would attempt a no-deal Brexit. That's the only way that the UK could possibly get what it wants from negotiations with the EU. Of course, that is a very contentious issue. It really does suggest that the UK needs a new parliament, that people need to realign their allegiances based on a polarity, whether the UK is going to leave or stay, and a new parliament should reflect that fact. Of course, the problem with a new election is that it doesn't rule out the potential that the next parliament could also be a hung parliament. And if that's the case, then the indecision will persist. This is obviously an uncertainty, and it is what is weighing on the pound. But the bigger point, which doesn't seem to be getting a great deal of coverage, is that the UK needs a concerted effort to streamline the economy, to become competitive on trade, to become competitive on taxation and regulation. That's the only way the UK is going to continue to lead in terms of economic growth and to maintain a positive yield on its bonds. Those are, I think, admirable objectives, but obviously that is to whichever government gets over this Brexit question. There just doesn't seem to be much vision in terms of what an administration is willing to do in order to try and reorder the economy, to iron out some of the inequalities, and to create a population which is happy with the outlook for their futures. And that is the true challenge that has been created by populism. This is a global phenomenon. And so far, we haven't really seen any real suite of policies to address the underlying weaknesses in society, other than to pour money on the question. And that's why we have negative interest rates. That's why we have so many bonds with negative yields. And it's looking increasingly likely that we're going to get even more of that. The trade war is the big uncertainty, and the question that has yet to be answered is how long will it take for that weakness to filter back into the US economy? If the US economy goes into a recession, then it is likely to lead to a global recession, because it is US consumer demand is sustaining just about everything at the moment with the slowdown in China. We are getting competitive currency devaluation in direct response to that phenomenon, and that is what is helping to support the gold price. And that is something that does look like it has legs. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.